Leaders in tech are burning out at an absurd rate. Control-Alt-Delete with Lisa Drury is a no-BS conversation with one of the top female executives who spent over 25 years in Silicon Valley. If you're suffering from the always-on, never-good-enough, will-replace-you-today machine called the tech space, this show's for you. Here's Lisa.
Do I have a treat for you today? You're probably going to feel my voice and my energy through the roof. So hold on to your hats, everybody. We've got, I am so honored to have the author of Permission to be Human, okay, with us today. So Control-Alt-Delete, it's always about rebooting leadership drive, mindset, beliefs, all things, right? And sometimes I think we forget that we're human because we're just so busy getting things done. So today we are going to lean in to give you permission to be human at work and in life. And Mary Beth Hyland, I'm speechless. I'm so happy you're here.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I know we already said this offline, but you have given me so much beautiful energy and charged me up. And so I can't tell you how excited I am to be here too.
Oh, I just love it. So for those of you listening, and you're so welcome, I've been reading the book over the weekend, getting ready for today. And I typically hold my energy back until I meet the guest and we talk, right? And Mary Beth and I have never met live. We're in a couple of communities that we really believe in. And so we've crossed paths. But I think I left you 3 Facebook Messenger voicemails. I was just like, oh my gosh, chapter blah, blah. Oh my God. And, you know, and I'm writing it down and marking it all up. And so the reason I'm so excited is I think that we as a world, right, especially in tech, the people listening here today in tech, 95% of people, as reported by the Wall Street Journal, are thinking about what's next and am I in the right job and is this the right fit? And I know, and I know you know, so much of that is about culture, how you're treated, right? And I'm on a mission to eradicate the always on, never good enough, will replace you tomorrow experience that is tech. And that's, I think, why I'm so excited to have you here, because what you talk about in this book, and I know how you embody your work, is going to help everybody. So whether you're the shareholder, CEO, mid-level manager, first-line manager, I'm going to say even individual contributor, what we're going to talk about today is going to help you step into and own and claim your awesomeness. And through the stories that Mary Beth has shared in her book and the beautiful playbook that's here, you're going to walk away with some tangible things you can do right now. So let me read you the official intro, so you know how awesome she is. Mary Beth Hyland is an international workplace culture consultant, mindfulness teacher, and values expert. She works with leaders and organizations to uncover and harness their intrinsic motivations so they can double down on their emotional intelligence, give themselves permission to be human, and thrive as a team. I mean, who doesn't want to do that right now? I mean, you listen, grab the coffee, grab the tea, and close the door, tell the kids to wait a minute, right? Because we are going to get some good stuff for you. Mary Beth, just tell us, like, what does it mean to give yourself permission to be human?
Oh my gosh. Well, first of all, I just was so happy when this title fell into my lap. And I say that because literally I didn't come up with this. One of my clients, I've been working with them for 4 years now, and they're a construction company. And just in the last year, the CEO came into a meeting and said, "You are giving us permission to be human." And I didn't know that was something we could do here. Mm-hmm. And it was like, once he said that, it gave me this whole new perspective on the work in a way that was so crystal clear, because I think just hearing permission to be human, you immediately get ideas around what does that mean. And so for me, what it means is meeting yourself where you are, not where you want to be, and having radical compassion for wherever that place is, mm-hmm. right? And so often we want to give ourselves permission to be perfect. I'm so guilty of this. I do this all the time. And I wrote this book, right? Mm-hmm. And so we are very, very happy to hold ourselves accountable to perfection, but we almost never give ourselves permission to be human, particularly in the way that we would give our best friend that permission, our partners, our children, the people we love, but yet we won't give it to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so as you experience in reading the book, the entire book is about how to do this and how to do this through honoring your values, those of your own and those shared values of the organization, but also recognizing that, yes, I can give you a playbook for here's step one, here's step two, here's step three, but nothing in life is that simple and direct, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's parts throughout the whole book that say permission to be human and highlights what is the likely obstacle here for our human experience that it might not necessarily happen, but it probably will. And so how can you give yourself and give others permission to be human in those moments so that you don't get just straight, go straight to frustration, instead of recognizing that we are very complex beings. And the more we can be kind and generous and meet ourselves in the places that make us perfectly imperfect, then we can truly do this work from a place of real longevity and sustainability.
There's so much to even unpack in that. First of all, I love that how cool is it that you're working with a client and this phrase shows up and you're like, oh my gosh, that's the book. Like, you know, cause I think all of us throughout our careers have these moments and it just like smacks you upside, you know, it's this God,
yes.
There it is. Right. And so for anyone listening, I'm going to just talk to each person for a second. So I'm just going to say, hello, person listening. With what you're saying, Mary Beth, about where we can give others permission, but like the perfectionist ways. So in tech, right, there's this, and I know you worked in tech, so I know you know this, but I'll just, for context, you know, I'm so really great at writing code, or I got my degree and I've been promoted because I'm just really good at this technical thing I do. And oh my gosh, if anybody thinks I don't have the answer, or, you know, I might have made a mistake, like there's a real kind of deep, deep shame that comes over someone who's always been put on this pedestal for being so technically brilliant. Then they get thrown into these leadership roles because, well, you're so great, you must be able to lead the team. And they're not given the skills and insight and permission to be human. You know, what do you say to that person who's listening right now, who's like, yeah, but if they find out like I'm human, I might just get laid off or lose my job. Like, because it feels risky to be human in tech.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that because I've been there in my own life and feeling like it was way too vulnerable to say what was really going on, right? Or speak completely from a place of authenticity because you didn't know what the consequences might be, right? Like, will people not respect me anymore? Will I still get these opportunities? Will I be looked at for a promotion or to lead the next project? Or are people going to put me into a box and say, oh, well, you know, they're not XYZ. And so one of the first things I would say to you, if you're in that permission, in that spot in life, is to start by giving yourself that opportunity, right? So before we go out, before we go to others, to look for that validation, to look for that assurance that, oh, it's okay. I see you, you see me. One of the best ways that you can start is by allowing yourself to have it right away, right? And that is such a beautiful thing to say and a very hard thing to do. Totally. Because most of us are used to, okay, my book is good because Lisa just told me it was good, right? Versus my book is amazing because it was a channeling of my heart and is the reason that I'm here, right? And it really doesn't matter whether or not Lisa feels that way. Mm-hmm. That's very hard to get to that place. And so it's a journey. It's a journey to go on. So I would say a first step, a really great tool that I use often with the folks that I work with one-on-one and even in group stuff is talking to yourself as if you're your own best friend. So if you were to say, so if you were to come to me and tell me an issue that was going on, you know, I'm really afraid because I made this error and I don't know how it's going to be received. And I don't know if I should come forward with it or whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, all you need to do is take that exact story and act as though your best friend is telling it to you. Mm-hmm. What would you say to him or her? How gracious would you be? How generous would you be in meeting them there and having empathy for how painful that can be to be in those moments? And then how can you gently and kindly hold your own hand and say, you know, I'm a human too, and I can make mistakes and I can own them and I can pick myself back up and I can be okay. And really, when you can have that inner validation first, then when you go in to talk to anybody else for it, it's a totally different game. Mm-hmm. Because you're not seeking it in order to be accepted, but rather simply expressing what is that needs to come out of you because it's something that you feel like, you know, you need to move it through and out versus trying to carry it like a burden forever. Does that make sense, Lisa?
Yeah. And I think I'll join you with that. So when I, yes, totally. And, you know, what I know in tech for sure, when people are like, well, the code is wrong, it's buggy, and we're not going to meet our deadlines, you know, the pressure is intense. And I think any leader listening, when someone comes to you and it has the courage to say, I'm human and I effed up and I just realized it, that moment right there is where you get to have humanity and love. And I mean, I even wore the necklace today. I don't know if you can see it, but it has all the hearts on it.
Oh, beautiful.
And I wore it because I think love belongs at work. And as a leader, you can either shame that person to feel like shit and then, you know, raise their amygdala fight or flight even more and stick them in stress response. Or you can say, you know what? Shit happens. What can we do about it right now? What ideas do you have to fix it? Where, how bad is it? You know, I think leaders can really give permission to be human to their employees too. And the employees need to be able to have the courage, right? To, like you said, it's almost like befriend themselves. And I'm guilty. I am not saying this is easy. Let me just be really transparent. I was on a boat yesterday. We have a boat, and I've been coping with food through the pandemic. And it's causing me some knee problems, right? And mm-hmm. I'm not as strong as I used to be. And I was really in the boat yesterday offering everybody, do you need sunscreen? Do you need water? And everybody was kind of like, I don't need anything. Quit asking me. And I got my feelings really hurt because I was trying to be valuable. And I realized, so I got real quiet and I realized, oh, I don't feel valuable because my knee is bugging me and I'm not in the water as much with my kid, right? Like mm-hmm. I'm feeling shitty about myself. And on the boat was my family, and I'm, you know, the tears are dripping because I'm in tune enough. And I'm like, this is what it is to be human. And they were like, you're valuable sitting here with a bum knee. We don't care if you're, we just want to be with you. Like, right, it's okay.
Right.
And I just say that because this translates what your book is about translates way beyond work too. This is about just your human experience on the planet. And I felt so much better after I shared that. And it wasn't pretty. There were tears around. I was like hiding behind the sunglasses. I'm not the expert at this. But I was willing to say, here's how I'm feeling. And then I made choices for the rest of the day to feel better about it. So if you write that buggy code, you can still fix it. But if you ignore it and act like it's not there, way worse.
Yeah. And you make an awesome point too about this isn't just about work. And in fact, I recommend that if this is a skill you want to strengthen, mm-hmm. start in the places that feel safe.
Totally. Right?
So not everybody feels safe in their families, unfortunately, but for folks like yourself who have the type of relationship with your family where you can be vulnerable and feel like you will be heard and seen and valued for what you're sharing, that's a wonderful place to practice these skills, to build these muscles, because it doesn't get easier because you just did it once.
Totally.
Yeah. You have to just keep doing it over and over and over again. It's interesting. Somebody recently referred to me as their vulnerability guide. And I was really, I'd never heard anything like that before, but they said that they have been so comfortable being vulnerable in our work together that they realized that it was possible for that to be a part of who they were and to not have somebody use it against them, to not be something that they were then ashamed of sharing afterwards, but rather that they had this huge burden removed and were able to lift themselves up into something bigger than what was always holding them back, which was not being able to speak their truth. And in the example you just gave with your family, I think it's so powerful because we have so many stories, right? We have all these stories about what makes me valuable and what is my identity? And if I'm not those things, what am I? And when we can kind of peel back and say, well, just because I told myself that the only thing that made me valuable was when I could go in the water with my, be with my family and do all these things, has nothing to do with their story of what makes this experience valuable, right? And so the more we can express those things out loud, the more likely we can come to an understanding of, oh, that was just something you were doing to create suffering inside of your mind. Mm-hmm. And I say that, Lisa, not in that that's a Lisa thing, but much as in that's all of our thing, right?
Yeah, welcome
to this. I mean, I just did this last week. I wrote this something, a post about somebody that I reunited with, and I wrote all these beautiful things, and I just went in, she didn't comment or engage with this. And I went into a spiral of, oh my gosh, should I share too vulnerably and connect her to it? And is that going to like mess up our relationship and all these kinds of things? And then 2 days later, I got this like 5-paragraph text about how the book has already changed her life. And like, it was one of these things where none of that was real.
Yeah. Yes.
It was a story that I had chosen to take on and carry as a burden to create suffering in my life because I was taking it personally and making up what it could be going on that I didn't know. And instead of thinking,
I feel you. Yeah.
You know, this is no big deal.
Yeah. Maybe she was on a plane and didn't even see it for you know what I mean? Who knows? And it's so funny because, you know, the story I tell myself, I learned from Brené Brown. And I use it with my clients all the time. Like, hey, is this real? Or, you know, and yet when we're in it, it feels so real. And so I think permission to be human is also to have the moments like I did over the weekend to go, yes, I'm an executive coach. And absolutely, I can help you get amazing results at work and prevent burnout and have high performing teams. And I'm also on my own journey. Do you know, like, to not put myself in this, like, I've got this all figured out. I know I can recognize it and I can get there. But yeah, being human is not simple. It's not.
And I think the older you get, and particularly folks who are entrepreneurs, right? People who are, or CEOs, people who are in high stakes positions, parents, right? Yep. That people are looking to them for the answers. Mm-hmm. There becomes this cloak of perfection that seems like it is necessary. I've had, particularly over the last year and a half with us all living in this upside down time, there's been so many parents who have said, well, you know, I didn't want to have my kids see me cry, or I didn't want them to see that I was having a hard time and all these kinds of things. And it was like, well, aren't you a human too?
Yeah. Yeah.
Aren't you allowed to have feelings too?
Yep.
Don't you want your child to know that it's okay to cry and that it's okay to have a hard day and to be the embodiment of what's possible to how you can move through those experiences?
Yeah.
And so I think there's a there's starting to be more of a shifting happening of recognizing like, oh, right, I can model that. And I think particularly as leaders, whether that's at home, at work, in your communities, everybody has the opportunity to embody this possibility for others, because as soon as I say something vulnerable, just in the way you shared with your knee and your family, you create the opening for everybody else to do the same. You're not telling them they have to, but you're saying that's okay here because look, I just did it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. You know, what's so interesting when I think about it. So I just want to show everybody, like, seriously, how much marking. I ran out of post-its, so I just started folding pages. And I was thinking about my clients when I was reading this, and I had left Mary Beth a voicemail. I can't wait for my clients to get this book. Amazing. But when I look at, you know, you had this concept of culture killers or culture, hold on, I don't have it memorized. Culture killers or culture guides?
Keepers.
Keeper. Ah, okay. I want to know about this. I think because this is what we're talking about right now is about culture, right? Making it safe to be human. So sure. What is a culture killer and what's a culture keeper and why does it matter?
Yeah. So I bet that who's listening right now could get a pretty good idea just by hearing the name, right? So And this can be in any environment too. Like I talk about it from the frame of the workplace, but culture killers and culture keepers exist everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it is really about the energy that they bring into a space.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So a culture keeper is an individual who brings the positive aspects of the energy of that space, right? So people want to be around them. They're the kind of individuals who are happy to listen. They want to collaborate on finding solutions. They care about the values of the organization and they embody them on a regular basis. They are somebody that people look forward to spending time with, whereas on the opposite end of that spectrum are the culture killers. And so these are the folks that people avoid at all costs. I mean, I've been in organizations where I myself, when I was an employee of a team, would like quickly take a turn around the corner because I didn't want to even like have that energy in my space, you know? People avoid them like the plague. They really are the kinds of people who are really ready to talk about what's wrong, but not necessarily have any solutions. They want to shut down new ideas and they are consistent values violators. So these are the folks who may hold somebody else accountable to it, but they're not going to hold themselves accountable. And so what's incredibly important about this is to recognize that you don't have to stay a culture killer. Right. It seems really easy to label like, okay, they're a keeper, they're a killer, they're a keeper, they're a killer, whatever it may be. And that can be problematic. So what's great about it is it gives you a starting point of, okay, maybe if I look through this, I can see where am I in alignment with being a keeper and where there are opportunities where I might be detracting from the positive aspects of this culture, but to know that you can change. And that there are opportunities. So maybe you're the kind of person that people don't look forward to collaborating with you. Maybe you don't even realize that that's what's going on, right? And so what's important is to recognize that no matter where you fall or where anybody else you may be labeling right now in your heads fall, is that they too have permission to be human. They don't have permission to get away with bad behavior on a consistent basis, but they do have the opportunity also, they deserve to have the opportunity to be seen and heard and to be met where they are, just like you would with anybody else. I think oftentimes we like say, oh, well, that person would never be open to this, or that we can't even have that conversation because that's not possible. So you're creating a story, just like we just talked about, right? You're already saying something is possible or not possible instead of just leaning towards possibility. You know, we don't know until we try. Cool. And so one of the things I talk about is that giving culture killers just as much as opportunity as a culture keeper in being able to lift up those proven practices that create a healthy environment, and also to coach and support them into how they can make some shifts in their behavior to have a sense of alignment, but also that they have a certain amount of time to get that together. Right? This is not an excuse forever. Mm-hmm. This is an opportunity for change, and there needs to be accountability in that process.
I think accountability is everything when you're talking about shifting a culture, right? And really agreeing to values and standards and looking at processes. And, you know, with burnout as high as it is right now, I was reflecting on what I read last night in your book, and I was thinking, first of all, is a culture killer intentional, right? Do they just have blind spots? You know, so I started really looking at the human side of it. And then I'm thinking to myself, you know, I always talk about look for contrary evidence. Like, when are they not a culture killer in my head? Like, when's the time when they did hold people bigger, they did add value, and then looking for that. And I started thinking, boy, I wish there was like a step-by-step process for people. And then I cracked up. That's why I was like, wait, it's in here. Like, ask this question, do this thing. Here's something to reflect on. And I'm like, I was just so like, I said, if there's another name for this book, it's the playback or the playbook, you know? So
yeah,
thinking about integrating. So chapter 7 is one of my favorites, right? Integrating values into cultural norms. And I think when I think about everybody so tired, grief that's not processing right now, because heck, people haven't even been able to go to funerals, do you know?
Yeah.
Loss and uncertainty and so much resilience. And then being fed this message, you know, here's a spa day. You know, a spa day is not going to recharge you to like go be a culture keeper. A spa day might, you know, let your heart rate mellow a bit or let you file some things in your brain. So when you think about this pressure in the world that we're in today, you know, what's something tangible people can do today to actually make sure that, you know, they're assessing, are they in keeper or killer mode when it comes to culture and values?
One of the best things to do is to ask.
Right.
And that can be really vulnerable, right? Like, yeah. Like it's like, no, anything but asking others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's something like, don't pick up the phone. You might have to talk to somebody, right? Yeah.
And I, just like we talked about with your family, it may make sense to ask, starting with the people that you know, love, and trust.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't need to necessarily be at work. But asking, like, what are the qualities that live within me that raise the energy?
Mm-hmm.
And what are the qualities in me that reduce or lower that energy?
Mm.
You know, that can be a nice way of framing it. So it's not like extremely personal per se. It can be, you know, more of a, oh, I've noticed that things are, you know, higher energy when these things are going on or lower energy when these things are going on versus necessarily like a knock on your character.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, once you do that, like once you start to get some of that feedback, so it can be literally as simple as, and my partner and I do this, like, what's one thing that I could have done that would have made this week better? In how I showed up.
Mm-hmm.
And what's one thing that I did that really improved our experience when we were together this week, and being able to have an ongoing rhythm and cadence. And now, so it's to the point where we're married, but we're also partners in business. And so it will literally be like, this is what killed that experience for me. And it was these bop, 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 bop. Mm-hmm. Three things, four things, one thing. And then we can talk about it like right there on the spot. Whereas in the past, that would have been something that I would just maybe hold inside and feel really annoyed about and not express. And then it would become some kind of a bigger eruption later down the road. This mm-hmm. happens in all of our relationships at work, right? There's so many experiences where somebody will blow up at you at the smallest thing, but they're not blowing up because of that thing. They're blowing up because of the 2, 3, 4 things that happened before that were never addressed because we're so afraid of what's going to happen when we talk to somebody honestly about how they're impacting us.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the best ways to practice this is to start by sharing with people how they're impacting you for the better.
Totally. Right. You know, just the experience of appreciation and to see what happens when you say, you know, the way you led that team meeting and how you gave space for the introverts to have a conversation and you circled back on that one because you could tell there was more, like, that was beautiful. I mean, who wouldn't want to hear that when you do that, right? Yes, starting with appreciation and gratitude, I think it just fills your tank so that you can then have a moment to go, okay, I can handle it now.
Yeah.
You know, that's why when I do 360s, they're narrative 360s, and I always start with strengths and what's working really well. Right. We're going to infuse you with all of your awesomeness first. Then we're going to have a conversation on what I actually term opportunities. It's not weaknesses. Right. It's not you sucks. It's like, here's a way to leverage all that greatness and even have an exponential impact on the business or your team. So yeah, I'm sorry. I get like, bah! Yes. Appreciation.
Yeah. It's so true. It's so true. And it's like, we so associate feedback with negativity.
Mm-hmm.
And so to be able to almost rewire ourselves into feedback is telling someone specifically what they did really well.
Mm-hmm.
So they can replicate that thing again versus saying, great job today. It's like, well, what made it great?
Yeah, totally. That is not helpful.
Yeah. Just like you wouldn't say that really sucked today and you wouldn't, and then just end it there.
Right. Yeah. It's funny, with every client I have, I start with celebrations, and it's even in the pre-work they do. And I'm going to say, they're like, what am I celebrate? you know, I don't have anything to celebrate and I'll just sit for a minute. You know, I'm like, how about at home? You know, did you drink 8 glasses of water? Did you get 7 hours of sleep? And we just start like basics. And wait, I did a great blah, blah. And this project really worked. And you know, that customer, and I'm like, there it is. So to remember all of the amazing things you do, because we're so wired to look for what's wrong instead of what's right. So grateful for this tangible moment of like, yeah, start with that. There was something else in here I really wanted to ask you about, and I'm just going to flip to my marked pages. And it had to do with people that are exiting. And I want to highlight this because there's something in tech, which is like, well, you're leaving us, so see ya. You know, you're going to a competitor, we're walking you. We don't trust you anymore, even if you've been here 20 years. How could you possibly want to be anywhere else? And I'm not saying every company's like this, okay? But I have enough people in my circle and in the clients that I support that there's a mindset of that manager, that leader feeling betrayed. Yeah. And I see it play out in the exit process. And I mean, even when you're laying off because you're trying to manage budget, you know, so many times I think there's such an missed opportunity for dignity and respect in the process.
Oh my gosh.
And transparency. So I feel like with what's happening in the world today, this could be a real game changer for people to really understand your view on this and what you write about. And I would just, what's your advice to people when someone resigns or you're laying them off? How can they what's the permission to be human in that process?
Yeah. So they're definitely different, right? So if you're laying someone off, that it could be for lots of reasons. It could be because they're not a good fit anymore and they're not producing. It could be downsizing, right? And then if somebody's leaving, there's a different energy associated to that because there could be some hard feelings on the company side. Like, why did they leave? You know, there's hurt feelings associated potentially. And on the other side, when someone's being terminated, there's obviously hurt feelings there too. Mm-hmm. So it's an experience that I think we don't often talk about, the emotional side, the way in which we interpret what's happening and how it impacts all of those around us, particularly on our team. So a lot of times, and this happened quite a bit, I was working with an organization who had to do several waves of layoffs in the last year. And it wasn't taking into account not only the grief of the individual, but their teams, mm-hmm. right? Particularly in a remote time, when normally you would be able to give them a hug and say goodbye and have a little lunch or whatever it might be, those things have changed dramatically. And so one of the things that I find to be incredibly important is to make room for grief. Make room for grief, both for the organization and for the individual, in a way that you would if someone were to leave this realm, right? To transition into the next place, because we don't realize how impacting it is when either we're losing a great team member or we have to let somebody go because of how much they're negatively impacting that team. And so a lot of the recommendations in the book are based on whether they're being terminated or, you know, they're leaving. But one thing that I would say is just so underrated and really important is being able to have a space where people can honor that process, right? And so even if in today's world, something as simple as a dedicated Zoom experience where everybody goes around and says something they appreciated about that individual or shares a story, a high point memory of their work together or has some words of good wishes for what they're going to experience next. That's something that we need to do as humans that we almost never do. The storytelling part, as we've talked about quite a bit in this interview, has so key to who we are. We make up stories about things. So if you're in a position where your team is losing someone, this is important to be able to help that narrative, help to create a space where people can honor that things are changing and feel like they have closure around whatever that is, so that you're not just ignoring it and hoping that people don't notice that, you know, whoever is no longer here and it doesn't impact us anymore because we're all remote now. So no big deal. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that's a pretty common thought. That's a pretty common thought these days. It doesn't have to be. I think a lot of times people are held back because it needs to be some kind of elaborate thing, like a big retirement party or a huge experience where we bring in all these vendors and have these big things, but it doesn't need to be that. It can literally be a half hour of intentional storytelling. And that can be a transformative experience for everybody there, because not only do they get to process what's happening with their team, but they also get to have it as a model for life and the ways that they can do that with others in their lives.
Yeah. Yeah. You honestly, well, for anyone listening, and for the listener right now, who's like, oh, I have someone I need to do this for, you get the play-by-play in her book. She tells you exactly what to say and like some different ideas to do it. And, you know, it's so interesting. So when I left corporate, my mom was dying. She was in hospice, and I didn't trust myself to just take a leave because I knew I'd work, and I knew that I had a limited time with my mom. So I made the choice to just leave and like take this leap of faith and see what happened. And what I really appreciated about that experience was, not only was it honored, but when I was ready to have my going away party, I could have it then. And so, you know, I can tell you it can be done really well. And I wanted a karaoke party because I wanted to sing, and I am a horrible singer. But I was like, well, they're going to have to listen. It's my party. And oh my gosh, it was so nice to like have that all processed out, to then show up, to really be able to have that. And I thought that it set a really, really great example for those around us that, you know, I was there for 20 something years, almost 21 years. And yeah, it could have been this big old blowout thing and forced it on me. Like, this is what we do. And they were just like, you have a lot going on, and, you know, we want to honor you and celebrate you when it's time. So you let us know. And it was such a gift.
That is such a gift. Mm-hmm. That is such a gift. And a gift to everybody involved, everybody, not just you.
Everybody, right? Because what they got to see was me in a better space too. I mean, I was grieving. I mean, the unknown, and, you know, the 20 plus years of all the, I mean, they were like family, and I still talk to them, most of them. But it was a whole process. And so I just want to highlight that. I think one of the things leaders forget is how much power and control they really have in that moment. That yes, there's some guidelines from HR that says collect the laptop and get the badge, but nobody's telling you when to have that Zoom celebration moment, or you know, that you have to do it within a week. Do you know? So to really be flexible, and also to really understand what that person's looking for and needs, right? So I just want to highlight that. Yeah, you have a lot more control than you might think you have, right? Yeah, you got to get the laptop and the badge back, but you don't have to have the party that day.
I think point.
I love what you're saying so much about this. So I want to double click on burnout for a second, because you had the first couple of chapters specifically on values. And I think there's something really tangible for the listener today that's going to be like, because when I burnt out, very long story quickly, I thought I was having a heart attack. I was in the emergency room with my laptop because I had a big presentation the next day to the executive team. And they said, okay, it's not a heart attack. I'm like, give me that laptop. I got to get this done, right? Later on, I took a 3-month leave. I rebooted, hence control, alt, delete. I rebooted everything, health, mental, physical, spiritual, family. And the way that happened for me was I started to get clear on how I wanted to feel. And I started realizing that the goals I was setting were externally validated goals, much like your Lisa thinks my book is great, right? Example. And I had to get really clear about how I wanted to feel: connected, collaborative, impactful. And the more I started realizing how I wanted to feel and looking that against and playing that up against the goals I was setting, I'm like, yeah, that next promotion requires extensive international travel. I don't want to feel disconnected from my family. Not even just because I'd get the title and the money. Nope. You know, so I started really, when I was reading your book, thinking about values, I think there's a lot of synergy there. And I've talked about how do you want to feel on this podcast forever. And I don't want anyone to miss out on your view and where you start in this book about really aligning and clarity on that. So What can you tell us about values and why they matter and how they lead you to the permission to be human?
Yeah, I love the conversation about values because they're an incredible entryway to talk about the bigger things that matter inside of us uniquely, right? So a lot of times concepts like emotional intelligence feel like kind of like a whole far, far out there, not really sure what step one is. I don't know how to make my way into that conversation. Whereas values are 100% a conversation about emotional intelligence. However, they're in a language in which the majority of us already speak. So when we can start to identify the words that represent our values, which our values are essentially our intrinsic motivators, the things inside of us that tell us this is right, this is wrong, the things that make us come alive and the things that drain us are a reflection of if our values are active or our values are being violated in those experiences. And so most of us, particularly in this burnout conversation, we could go and have an experience and say, I hated that, or I loved that, or that left me feeling so drained, or that left me feeling so energized. We don't necessarily connect it to our values. Mm-hmm. So what's super powerful for anybody who's interested in going on a journey of well-being, of self-care, of a sense of personal alignment, is to be able to take the time to uncover the values that are a true representation of what it means to feel fully alive as you. So for me, those are unity with nature. So being able to be outside, feeling the wisdom, gaining wisdom from Mother Nature in all of its forms, vulnerability. So for, again, this is my definition, having the ability to speak my truth, even if my voice shakes, mm-hmm. authenticity, right? It goes hand in hand with vulnerability, being able to really be myself and not feel that I'm being judged for that person. So those are things that are really important in my daily existence. So if I don't have those parts of myself activated in one day, something feels off to me. Something feels out of alignment. Something feels like it's wrong. And prior to doing all this values work, I would just say like, today sucked. Mm-hmm. Right? Instead of being able to say, I didn't have any time in nature today. And I am feeling so drained because of that. So now I'm going to mm-hmm. get myself to the park, mm-hmm. go spend some time in my garden, go pet my cat for a while, whatever it might be. So you can start to even identify, okay, I'm feeling drained. How can I bring my values in to help recharge me into a sense of purpose, into a sense of alignment in a way that is self-guided? No one else can tell you what your values are. They might try.
Yeah.
But you're really the only one who can say, that's totally me. That is exactly who I am. And actually, this is the most powerful work of all the work that I do, is helping individuals to uncover their values. I have a course on Insight Timer, which is a mindfulness app that people can take 24/7. It's a 10-day, 15 minutes a day, do at your own pace. It's called Knowing and Living Your Values. Mm-hmm. So if anybody listening is interested in really taking the time to do this, I would highly encourage you to check that out. You know, I also do this in real time. We have a Life Lens retreat coming up just in a couple weeks here for people who want to do it together in a retreat format online. But what I find is that people are so, so brilliant, and they haven't given themselves the space to honor that light, that energy, that brilliance, because they haven't connected the dots to why maybe one environment was a great fit for them and another was terrible, or one relationship was amazing and another wasn't. And being able to say, oh my gosh, that's because I was able to be vulnerable mm-hmm. and I was able to be authentic. And in that place, I wasn't, you know, and those kinds of things that really are the makeup of who we are as individuals. And of course, there's so many other factors involved, but values can get you very, very far in creating both a compass and guardrails for your own personal sense of well-being every day when you not only know them, but you own them as yours. And then you choose to live them on a daily basis as a way of creating a personal sense of alignment between your actions and your values.
So anybody who's ever burnt out is nodding right now, I can tell you, because the burnout process, right? As I think burnout is, I'm messing up my words here. Being out of sync with your values for an extended amount of time accelerates burnout.
This is Yes.
My thesis. Okay. I'm just going to preach it. When I think about my journey and the clients that I work with, there's absolutely a misalignment on values. And, you know, I think that's when people start to feel dead inside, and that's where the cynicism comes in. And that's where the poor food choices or the lack of sleeping. It's just like, you're not lit up, so you're not productive, right? And you're just right. Like in this constant like one of the stories that you tell in the book that I think would really help people realize how much control they do have over this, instead of feeling like, well, I'm just stuck and I need the paycheck, is your floor story. And I don't want to steal any thunder or tell it, because it's yours to tell. Can you share a little bit about that, so that people that are going, oh, maybe my values aren't aligned, maybe there is hope and I don't have to burn out, and what can I do? Right? Because I think that story is so powerful. So
it's a real story, which I think makes it so even more powerful, because it just really made a dramatic shift for myself. And so before I share that story though, I'd love to say one of the lines and one of the things I say all the time is, your team isn't burnt out because you're doing too much. It's because you're doing too little of what activates their values.
Say it again, because this is...
Your team isn't burnt out because they're doing too much. It's because they're doing too little of what activates their values.
Can I join you real quick? And we're going there. So I always say, working in tech doesn't cause burnout. It's how work gets done.
And which are your values.
Right? And we're like, look at this, like two different things that we say over and over again. They're coming right together. And I think the floor example is going to be so powerful.
Yeah, it is. And so this story. So before I started my business, I was working for a global organization. I was a big hitter in the company, and I was running a program that I had responsibility for. So I was responsible for about 7,000 volunteers, young professional program. And I led from a place of honoring my values, honoring the values of the people who were volunteers, for feeling like it was important to be transparent, for having a clear vision, things that to me were pretty normal. It wasn't like I went to a special school to learn these things. It just felt, it was intuitive to me to do it this way. And so there was a time where I was reprimanded in a very intense way for sharing a vision with the volunteers that was not all rainbows and sunshine, right? It was telling them where I wanted this to go, and then talking to them also about what were going to be some of the challenges that we together were going to overcome to get that, make that vision a reality. And my supervisor found out about this. I guess she heard through the grapevine that I had been that transparent with the team, and tore a new one, really. Was basically told that all the things that were wrong with me as a leader, and how you don't need to share everything. And there's truth to that. You don't need to share everything, right? But for me, we were such a cohesive tribe that it was so wrong. It was like, why would I possibly lead them into danger without them knowing we got to put on our gear first, right? And so I was really deflated. I was in a place of just questioning everything, wondering if I could even keep doing this work, because I felt like I was being told that everything was wrong with me and that nothing was right with me. And meanwhile, the program I developed was the global best practice model for young professional engagement. And so I went to a cherished friend who was a colleague, and I said to him, like, am I wrong? Because you'll tell me the truth. Like, you will tell me what's right or wrong here, because I just need to know, am I wrong? Should I not have done this? Do I need to apologize? I'm being told these things. And so he said, you know, Mary Beth, that's like, this reminds me of this beautiful little story that he shared. And he said, it's like, you came into this organization and immediately you noticed that the floor was on an angle and people were losing things. They were rolling around. People were having issues with their backs. And as soon as you noticed it, within a few days, you went and talked to people and said, hey, have you noticed that the floor is on an angle and it's causing all these problems for us? And everybody around you said, well, yeah, but if you just bend over like this, it doesn't hurt so bad and you'll get used to it because over time you just accommodate, you acclimate to what it is. And he said, what's going on here is that you want to fix the floor and everyone around you wants you to bend over. Mm-hmm. And we need more people who are going to fix the floor. I'm getting like choked up just remembering this because it was so powerful. We were in this little conference room together as he was saying this to me. And 2 days later, I resigned because I knew that there were people who wanted to work from a strong foundation, that there was something to what I was doing that mattered, and that people were craving that environment instead of what most of us are willing to accommodate pain and suffering and knowing there's a better way because it feels safe and stable to be somewhere where we know we're going to get a certain paycheck every other week. Yeah. And for me, it wasn't worth it. It wasn't worth it anymore. And thankfully, you know, 6 years into my business now, I have the privilege of helping organizations pull up the floor and change the foundation, or in wonderful scenarios, build the floor with them to start.
Mm-hmm. I get choked up here. I'm so grateful that not only did you write about it, but I get the privilege to witness you tell that story live. Thank you. And thank you for letting us see your humanness, right? And getting choked up. I'm also choked up hearing you talk about it because I can feel it. And I just, there's so many broken floors and crooked floors and people wanting to like do something about it and feeling like, I guess I just got to bend over and, you know, have back pain and get new pencils every week because they're rolling out of the cracks. And I just wonder, I guess I just want to invite everyone to imagine a world to what Mary Beth is talking about, where you are part of the team that actually can help lay the foundation, build the floor, or unearth it together, rebuild it. And I think that that's possible with two things. Number one, clarity on values, which goes back to the beginning of your book, right? And number two, that you're part of an organization that values you having ideas and recommendations and hold space for that. And I think for any leader who's listening, my highest and best hope for you is that you reflect on where your floors are crooked and then find the people that are willing to tell you and then invite them into solution space, because it's magical. I mean, it's magical. I don't have a better technical term. I just don't, you know? I mean, what advice do you have for the leader who's sitting here going, my floors are crooked, I don't want to hear about it, I'm too busy, but I know I should.
Yeah. Well, if you're too busy, then you are comfortable in suffering. You're comfortable in pain. And unfortunately, I think that's actually the majority of us are very comfortable in that space, but that doesn't need to be the comfort zone. Imagine how much more productive, effective, the collaborations, the innovations, the profit that would be a result of people experiencing every day from a place of being able to thrive, from a place of being able to feel a sense of purpose. You know, there is just so much evidence that when the human experience is honored at work, the results in the impact, both in short and long term, are immense. So if you think that, okay, we'll just ignore it longer and hope it works itself out, or, you know, maybe we'll stomp on this floor enough that some of the kinks will work out themselves. That's a one way, you know, that's an option. That's an option a lot of people take. However, there is an even more effective thing to do. And that starts with you as an individual. It starts with you as an individual, just how we began this conversation today, and looking at your own floor that you've created underneath of you.
Yeah.
What are the opportunities that you have to pull up some of those baseboards, right? To understand like what's getting moldy, what's on a slant, you know, what are the things that need to be replaced, and how can you give the rest of the team that very permission to look at themselves and then to look at the unit collectively in a way that you're not making people feel like they're doing something wrong or they're bad, but rather that you're going to create a new possibility together in the future that everybody has the chance to be a part of making and creating together.
That is the world I want to live in. And that is where I strive every day. And I will tell you the bookend on this is, you know, I run these retreats and every year we set our intentions and our goals, and we always look at what lights you up and then what are you tolerating? And then you get to choose, are you going to keep tolerating it or do something about it? And doing something about it doesn't mean changing. It can either be stop letting it bug you or take action, right? You know, if you got weeds in the front yard and you just don't want to prioritize that, then quit moaning and groaning about the damn weeds and welcome them. Be like, well, hello, weeds. I'm glad you're here today. We are not going to be bothered anymore. So I think one of the things that you're highlighting for me is this lens around choice, intention, and also clarity, because when you recognize you have a choice to the energy you bring, you're clear on the intention that you want, and you have the clarity on what matters to you right now, all of that like noise can go away, and it's a hell of a lot safer to be human.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't ever want this to end. I could talk to you for 82 days in a row. I will invite you back, of course. Is there anything in the book that I didn't highlight that you think for this conversation, specifically burnout in tech, that we want to highlight for them? Cause they're all going to go get this book. So where do we want to lead them?
Yeah, I think you've done quite a beautiful job, no surprise, in taking us on a meaningful journey in a bunch of different areas. But I would just end with saying that whoever's listening, you deserve to have permission to be human. And the people around you deserve that very same thing. So the more you can start within yourself, the more you can look in the mirror, the more that you can understand your own opportunities and celebrate what you're doing well, right? It doesn't always have to be about improvement. Really being able to say, I am a badass when it comes to honoring my people, or I'm a badass at debriefing with myself after experiences. It doesn't matter what it is, you know, do more celebrating than looking at where you need to do better, right? That's part of meeting yourself where you are. You're being perfectly imperfect, but then doing it in such a way that others experience it and therefore gain that very permission. That same permission to do the same. When you embody this work, I know that 99% of the individuals and organizations that partner with me because they see me living it, not because I have a certain certification or a certain, you know, amount of hours that I've done in this work, but rather I see that possibility through the embodiment of your life. And I'm not special in that. This isn't a special gift that I have. This is something we all have the opportunity to do. But what makes it special is choosing it every single day, especially on the days that you would much rather not, and you'd much rather go run and hide or say, nope, today's a day of perfection and that's all it is. Mm-hmm. The more that you can learn how to cultivate that inside of yourself, the ripple effect is exponential. You have no idea. Yeah. And I'm only beginning this journey. You know, it's only been 6 years on this very intentional journey. And I can't imagine what 16 and 26 and 36 and 56 years of this are going to look like, because it's no end point. It's a constant evolution in this journey of alignment and choosing to live a life of consciousness and a life of connection, where you can ignite that first for yourself and therefore spark that possibility for others.
So everybody knows I love a good song. So if there's a song that's going to lift your spirits for you, if you're feeling like, I got to get back into humanness, I'm going to go celebrate some things and raise my energy, what's your go-to song?
My go-to is Alicia Keys, This Girl's on Fire.
Of course it is. This girl is on fire. Yeah.
Yep. That's okay. It. That's my jam.
And I love your face when you say it too. It's almost like even sit a little taller. You're like, I am on fire. Oh yeah. I love it. Okay, that's going into the playlist. Now tell me this, for everybody who wants more, you have been so giving, not only with the book, but with all of the resources that are out there. And everyone grab your pen or pencil. Of course, we'll put it in the notes, but tell us, where's the best place, Mary Beth, for people to learn more? Where can they get the book? Where can they find your stuff on Insight Timer and everything in between? Where do we want to
start? Yeah, well, our website has all the things, which is sparkvisionnow.com. You can get the book through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, any major retailer. The link to Amazon is on our website. And if you want to connect with me personally, I'm very active on LinkedIn. So I would be delighted to continue the conversation. I post most days and I'm constantly sharing about this journey to alignment, not just the highlights, but particularly the lowlights. And I think it's a wonderful opportunity to connect with people who want to go on this journey of authenticity and to understand what it looks like and what it sounds like when you are sharing both sides of that coin. And so I'd be honored and delighted if folks want to connect in that space as well.
Everybody, you're going to LinkedIn, you're going to connect. Number one. Number two, you're going to sparkvisionnow.com and you will not believe how much amazingness is there. That's exactly how I got my copy. I just went to her website and I downloaded it. Awesome. You know, I was just like, I got to get this now. So follow Mary Beth, engage with Mary Beth. She's the real deal. And it's just such an honor to have this space with you today. Thank you for sharing your gifts with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You have, you know, talk about knowing when your values are being activated. This experience was a full alignment experience for me. And it just told me like, I need more Lisa in my life. Yay. And so I'm so grateful and honored to have your enthusiasm for this work and for my leadership in this work. And I cannot wait to see what abundance is coming because there's obviously good things here. And so I thank you to this community.
Yeah. You're so welcome. So everyone, just know we are here to tell you it is your divine right to be human. It's your divine right. Your permission slip is here. It's in this book and it's in every conversation we're having. Make it a great day. Go listen to This Girl's on Fire. Think about what Mary Beth has had to say to us today and share your comments and share this video with everybody who needs it because this is your permission slip to be human and this is exactly what you're meant to do. All right. Thanks, everyone.
That was great content, but let's be honest. If you don't get the support you need and start making changes in your life and work as a leader in tech, you can expect regret and burnout in the near future. Lisa can help you get kick-ass results at work without burning out so you can be present for the moments that matter to you and your loved ones. Take your first step at rebootwithlisa.com.